You won't be regretting all of your decisions like Aubrey after the reward challenge when you do your shopping online at Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robaswebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robaswebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's one of the misfits from high school who never came out on top, Rob Cesperino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast, voicemail edition, week number 8 of Survivor Go Wrong. And today, we're going to be joined by my good buddy from post-show recaps, from the Seinfeld post-show recap, Akiva Winokur, is going to be joining us. Voicemail podcast number 2 for him. We had a great time last season and looking forward to having him back here on the show. We did Seinfeld recap number 100 this week. So we are going to celebrate that, another number 100 here on the podcast. Great week of podcasts that we've already got here in the can so far. Chaos Cast did a recap with her about the episode. That's up on robaswebsite.com. Plus Survivor Know-It-All's number 100 and my exit interview with Nick. You could hear that all on robhasawebsite.com, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes to make sure you subscribe to the podcast, or you could check out the Rob Has a Podcast app to get everything we do on post-show recaps, reality TV wrap-ups, and Rob Has a Podcast all in one place for Android and iOS, robhasawebsite.com/app. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to get into the voicemails with our guest this week. Him and I are celebrating a milestone of our own. Just like Stephen Fishback and I had our 100th Survivor Know-It-Alls and 100th podcast together, not only will I soon be celebrating my 100th podcast with this man, but also we just reached a big milestone on the Seinfeld post-show recap as we covered the recap of the Seinfeld 100th episode. Here he is from the Seinfeld post-show recap and his own podcast talking about the world of sports, 32 fans in 32 days, the great Akiva Winokur.
That's a lot of hundreds in that introduction.
Really was. Yeah.
So just keep track. This is our 100th podcast or something like that, like 99th
not
or 100th.
Quite. Yeah, not quite. We're right around there.
And then Steven just hit 100, plus Know-It-Alls just hit 100.
And I think Jessica Lease and I just did our 100th podcast. So really, keeping it 100 with a lot of people, it really is sort of like an amazing, like this might be the end of the world. I think I've just have hit 100 with so many different people in the last week or so.
I mean, we're all going for, at this point, I think Nicole's in first, but we're all coming for her record.
Yeah, as I told Nicole the other day, you know, we are at, I think with Nicole, I think that the number that was Sean Falconer put together with his stats, I think was 265 or 266. And I said, well, by this time a year from now, Nicole, you'll be at 268. Yeah, so she's not really moving up those numbers. At some point, she's just sort of like the home run leader, and it's like, her record is just not really moving.
Yeah, well, Wigger's going to pass her, but people have accused him of steroid use for podcasts, so I'm not sure his record will count.
Performance-enhancing drugs, sure. A lot of people accuse Steven of performance-enhancing drugs after they said that he was on painkillers, and they said he was so much funnier than normal.
Is that an insult? I feel like they're not used to him being funny. No, he was. He sounded really... like he was having a good time. Whatever he was taking, we should all get some of it.
Well, people were saying, I saw R. Philly saying on Twitter, like, boy, Steven, you should keep doing it. I feel like that this is sort of a bad direction to be pushing Steven in, no?
Yeah, I feel encouraging drug use for like a 60-minute podcast. I'm not sure that's worth it.
So I think that this happens with like a lot of musicians and stuff like that. Like, oh, wow, you were really great out there. Like, whatever you were doing, just keep it up. Don't stop.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody needs it, it should be you because you're doing like 10 a day. I feel like that you should be taking uppers or downers or something like that.
Something or both. Anyway, so very excited to have you back here on the Recap Podcast. We did a recap last season, got a lot of positive feedback. I don't want to give you a big head or anything.
Well, who could forget the episode where Monica Padilla got voted out because there was something like weird going on in the ocean? And
they took all the clams. They took all the clams.
Really probably one of the 10 greatest episodes in the history of the show. So,
well, you made something out of nothing that week. And so we have got a lot to get through in this podcast. So, of course, we're going to get into all of your voicemails. First off, how are you doing? Good?
I'm doing great. I feel like, you said I've done 100 podcasts. If I do 100 more, maybe I'll get my name on the Rob Has a Podcast wiki.
Oh,
I'll get in there at some point.
Shots fired.
I'm doing good. No, I'm just kidding. You know, our Mets are 1-1. What could be bad?
A lot of good stuff. A lot of stuff to be happy about. All right. So we had a very interesting episode of Survivor last night. And really, the first big shakeup of, I would say, even the game. I mean, would you say that this is the biggest move of the game?
Yeah, definitely. The biggest move of the game so far. I mean, it's a huge move. It totally changes the entire complex of you know, the nine remaining players.
And it does seem like it's fun. It just seems like this is the beginning of the sort of like, you know, the Neil stuff that sort of like set the table a little bit. But now we are really into it. This is really the inciting incident, I feel like, of the whole post-merge. And now we're going to sort of put the pieces in after this. So let's jump into the first question. And then that's a good jumping off point to get your take on everything that happened last night. Let's start with Umberto.
Hey, Rob. This is Umberto here. I have a bone to pick with you. So yesterday during Nordals, you were saying that it was an early move for Sydney and the girls to get into the All Girls Alliance. And you said that you wanted for them to wait a little bit with a vote or two. The problem is, if they wait, Aubrey and Debbie are not going to be there because they were the first two targets. And then there will be a boys club with five guys and three girls. I think that's the reason why Sydney didn't want to wait. She saw the writing on the wall. She saw the women's were going down, and she had to move. Let me know what you think.
So this is going back to the discussion I was having with Steven last night on the Know-It-Alls about, was this move too early? Now, Umberto is saying that, of course, she had to make the move now because it's five men and five women. If you lose one of the women, then once it gets down to five men and four women, then the men will stick together and will eliminate the possibility of the women's alliance. Do you agree with Umberto's logic, or do you see this differently?
No, I think Umberto's dead on. I do think that just because this is essentially like the merge episode, since Neil went home without a tribal, that this is the time to play your cards, because if it goes wrong here, then like you said, you're down 5-4, or depending on any combination, you're in the minority possibly, or you just can't make a move against them. At least the women are in the minority. To me, you have to strike the first time you can, when you know you're going to have the numbers. And, you know, I guess a better question is like, is Nick the right guy if you're going after the guys? But in terms of the women making a move, you have to make it now when you know you have the numbers, because who is going? If they say, let's wait three more days, who's going instead? It's going to be a woman, right?
It would probably be Aubrey next.
Yeah. So then your numbers are done. So, I mean, if their goal was women's alliance and not, I just want to vote with people I trust, because obviously it wasn't just the women's alliance. They had two men with them. You know, this was really their only chance. I think Umberto's right.
But I don't know if we can presume that the men's alliance was a thing. I mean, I think that Nick was probably going to be somebody that was going to be disposable to Jason and Scott. And again, Sydney was out there with Jason and Scott. She would probably know much better than me, somebody who's just watching the show. But I feel like that I didn't think it was this situation where if it's like a football game and it's like, oh, should I go for it on fourth down, or should we punt here? And I think there's a lot of time left on the clock at the final 10. I don't think you need to go for it. I don't think this was fourth down territory for Sydney to make this move here. I know that, yes, the possibility of the women outnumbering the men, you were going to lose that opportunity. But I just don't think that that was the only path to the end for Sydney. I think that there were other ways that she could have gone there with maybe Jason and Scott. It didn't seem like they were turning on her. So I think I would rather have the safety of not being the target for a few more votes. And I feel like that my time to strike in Survivor, and I think that traditionally the time where a winner really gets into pole position, I think is around final 8, final 7, final 6 in that area. And I feel like we're just probably 2 or 3 more votes away from where you can be able to make that move and really know what your end game is going to be. I feel like she's making this move and it's like, I think this is going to be good. She even says in the episode that I'm going to make a big move. I don't know if it's going to work, but if it doesn't, it doesn't. And if it does, great.
Well, if you're Sydney, there's a few things you have to think about. One, now if she wants to go back groveling to Scott and to Jason, they don't have a lot of options, so they would definitely hear her out. So I feel like she has some bond to every single person in the game, basically, at this point.
And they might take her back, but I can't imagine that it would be for good. I think that it would be they would take her back.
Well, then who's their three ultimately?
Good question. Can they ever trust her again, though? I feel like that probably Ty would certainly replace her in that alliance. I think that the die is cast now. I don't see how she could go back with them.
You're right. But aren't they dumb enough to still think that she's a goat, possibly?
I don't think that they're particularly dumb. I think that maybe... why would they think that she's...
I shouldn't say dumb. I just think maybe sort of like egotistical, like, oh... If it's the two of us, we're both like these big time players. You know, we bring a quiet person like Sydney in there, and she's just going to be like a, you know, a pretty typical third place.
No, but that ship sailed also because she has this move on her resume now. And it's sort of like they can't bring her to the end and say, oh, she did nothing. We were the ones.
Are you using Rob logic or Scott Pollard logic?
Well, it's hard for me to get inside somebody else's head that much. But I feel like that if you were going to bring her to the end and said, hey, look at Sydney. She did nothing. We did all the work around here. Then she's going to say.
And I'm like,
yeah, I made a big move.
This was really a Sydney's coming out party, even before the strategic vote. I do feel like we'd heard so little of her, and now I want more. I feel like her confessionals were really good in this episode.
She did have a lot to say all along this. So I don't think that it was a now or never move for Sydney, and I definitely understand why people feel like it was. But at Final 10, I just think there was too much time left on the clock. Do you buy into that analogy?
Well, I think your point is good. And you know, having watched all 32 seasons in the last couple of years, has anybody ever won the game at Final 10? Probably the answer is no.
No, and there have been times where, and people have cited these examples where I've criticized Tony. I said that Tony makes the move against LJ. That's too early. I've also said about Tyson in Blood versus Water that, oh boy, he's voting out Aris, and that's too early. But I feel like that both of those guys where, you know, Tyson has people that are super loyal to him in Jervis and Monica, and then he has Hayden and Caleb with him as well when they flip against the side that has Aris and Tina and Katie and Vetus. And then also with Tony, you know, he's flipping with Wu always, and that's always two. I just don't see the Sydney thing as her being in a quote-unquote voting block with any people. It's not like Julia and Michelle are super loyal to Sydney. It's not like Aubrey and Debbie are super loyal to Sydney. So she's flipping, and I feel like she's still a little bit alone on an island at 10.
Yeah, it's a big move to make with an even number also. It, you know, we don't always see huge moves at 10 and 8. You know, mm-hmm. They're generally more often at 9 and 7. But they were obviously very confident that they would be able to pull it off. And I mean, also, like, if you're Sydney, like, don't you need to build up a resume? Maybe you don't get another. Even if you're in the majority alliance, maybe you don't get another chance to have a move that's clearly yours. And I guess we don't even know if she's going to be viewed as sort of the mastermind of this, but, you know, she's got to try something.
And even play it out further. Okay, so let's say that she does stick with the women's alliance, and then it gets down to, what, the final five women, and then who's the last guy standing? Is it Joe at that point? And then at some point, you're going to get to a situation where, is it better for Debbie and Aubrey to keep Joe around? That I think it probably is. And so you end up potentially in a 3-3 split where you force Sydney to go with Michelle and Julia and potentially in sort of a rock draw there. So you probably want to make a move at 7 now. And then so what does that look like? Is it that Sydney and Ty have to join up with Michelle and Julia at that point? And then you get down, even if you went that far down, it's a very complicated line to the end where I feel like I would just rather be safer longer before I jump out of the plane with my parachute to start making these big moves.
Ironically, that's not really how you played necessarily, but I hear
it is how I played though.
I guess it is, yeah.
I left the safety of my 4-person alliance at the final 7. That's when I decided to make the move. And I jumped into a group that I felt like I had I was number one in a new group of four. And I don't feel like that Sydney is number one in any of the new groups that you put her in. Even if you put her in this group of five, I don't know if necessarily is she seen as the leader of the 5-person alliance that is the women now. I'm not sure if I necessarily buy that. She's certainly not number one with Michelle and Julia. I don't believe that she's number one. I don't believe that she's number one with Debbie and Aubrey and Joe.
Yeah, but who was she number one with beforehand? Like, clearly she didn't feel she has a better read on her situation at this point than we do. Clearly she didn't feel like, you know, that great with Scott and Jason or Nick. So, you know, at a certain point she has like, you know, the devil I don't know might be better than the devil that hates me. I don't know if that's an analogy, but
it might be, but I don't think anybody was hating her before. I think that she was sort of just under the radar and at a point where she was going to continue to advance round after round after round, I believe. Now, Nick did say that he would have wanted to get her out the next round, but just because Nick wants to get her out the next round does not mean that she's going out the next round. And again, according to Nick, I don't believe she had that information either.
No, there's no way she would have known it. I don't think Nick was calling the shot. So I don't think, you know, it just that would have been a very bizarre final nine boot, even if we had seen, you know, a Debbie or an Aubrey go out at this vote. So I don't think Sydney was really wary of being the next person out. I think she was just looking for stronger allies.
And also, I want to be very clear about this. I'm not saying that this definitely will not work, and I'm not pounding the table. Mark my words, you know, Sydney will lose the game next week. You'll see. I'm just saying that I feel like that I would have gone with the safer plan for a while and then gone with a plan where I can sort of like see the path to daylight from that point, where as opposed to it's like, I don't know, let's see what happens, you know?
But how does she win in that scenario?
In which scenario?
If she gets to a final five with, you know, with the people she's originally with, like even if they say, oh, we're going to bring her as a goat, like I don't, what moved?
Well, who's in the five? Who's in the five?
I mean, I guess is that Jason, Scott, okay, Nick, and then, I don't know, Ty?
I think Nick's probably gone by that point. I think it's probably, you know, one of the two other women that are there.
Right. I mean, but there's no real, you know, assuming.
I think five's too late also. I think that there's probably a point between now, which is 10, and five, which is probably too late. I feel like there's probably a jumping off point around 7 or 8, which is going to be some other alliance, which we may not know what that is just yet.
All right, let's agree to disagree.
All right, let's take another question that's about this same subject. And this is from Graham, who wants to know about who would be best for Sydney to go to the end with.
What's up, Rob? It's Graham from Pacifica CA. I've been listening to the Evolutionist Strategy, and I just finished the South Pacific chapter. And in that, you were talking about how in the final tribal that Albert and Coach matched up well for Sophie in the end. That got me thinking about Sydney, who's in an interesting spot where she's in this women's alliance, but she can also try and get back in bronze good graces. That being said, if she's thinking about the end at this point in the game, who do you think Sydney's best final three matchup is? Should she make a deal with one of the pairs in the five or make it a Toe Tang trio? Love to get your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, have you given any thought to this? Who would Sydney be best served to sit next to in the final tribal council?
Yeah, I haven't been able to sleep at night giving it so much. Yeah. No, it's a really good question, honestly. Part of it is I don't really know, you know, if we're saying who are the goats, who are the Sherrys and the Monicas out there that you want to bring to the end? My only problem is I don't totally know the perception that some of the players have to some of the more like outlier type players, like a Joe or even a Debbie, like in terms of if they got to the end, how that, you know, how they would be perceived. There aren't a lot of obvious goats here in this season. And there also aren't a lot of people who, you know, a Jeremy last season that are absolutely frightening to take to the end. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? It's a good question. I'm not sure. I guess Julia, because she's 18, like, are you going to have people, you know, Jason with an autistic child and Scott with, you know, his interesting family history you know, are they going to give $1 million to, you know, a teenager? So maybe Julia would be the type of person I would want to bring to the end. I don't know who else. What do you think?
I think that Sydney actually would be pretty tough to beat against anybody in the end. That's not the issue with the move for me in any stretch of the imagination. I think that this really does help pad her resume. I think that if she could get back with Jason and Scott, I think that those guys, especially based on in the previews, it seems like that they're going to tantrum a bit about this and be a bit unreasonable. And maybe we see a little bit more of the Jason and Scott from earlier in the season come back into play. If she could get back with them, it seems like that I think that she would probably be the most likable of those three. I also think that she would probably do pretty well, I think, next to Julia and Michelle, unless that, you know, you had those guys on the jury really carrying on and being bitter towards Sydney. I feel like that of those options, I think that Debbie and Aubrey would be the worst pairing for her, because I think that they could also point to where they played really hard also, and they also didn't act in a way that was very unbecoming, at least to this point. So I feel like I would stay away from Debbie and Aubrey.
Right. And in terms of me not even saying Jason and Scott, obviously those are two people you have to look at as potential goats, possibly. I just don't know how much she trusts them at this point. That, you know, if she could somehow worm her way back in, even that they wouldn't, you know, take revenge and knock her out at Final Five or Final Four in favor of someone they think is goatier.
And again, a lot of game to be played between now and then. But it is something good to be thinking about in terms of, you know, which pair do you want to go with? But she has a lot of options.
Yeah, I mean, it really, in the season as a whole, there really aren't, you don't have this like dominant alpha male that everyone's petrified of. Even, I mean, Nick is like a pretty, you think he's a typical merge boot, if we're calling him a merge boot?
Yeah, I think that that's been the narrative on Nick. I think that coming into the merge, I think we looked at him as somebody who could go home because of that. I mean, he really was somebody who was also won the challenge, first challenge after the merge. So definitely somebody I think that they were thinking about along those lines.
But usually it's someone a little bit more likable. Like LJ, people really liked. Yeah. You know, Jeremy in San Juan del Sur was a person people really liked. So there wasn't really this frightening person that was an obvious merge boot.
I think that of the people that were left, I think he probably most fit that profile.
Yes, but now, and also now it's just so wide open. Like, think about every challenge. You know, if you have a balancing, then maybe type of challenge, then you have the Sydneys and the ties. But there aren't really a lot of, when you look at who was left last year at Final Nine versus now, you know, it's wide open for you know, there's not really a Joe out there.
No, there is no Joey Amazing.
There is a Joe, but he's 72.
He's a Joey.
Joey Invisible.
All right. This is another question regarding Sydney. This is from James in Chicago.
Hi, Rob and Akiva. This is James coming to you from Chicago, Illinois. My question is about Sydney. So we saw last night that Sydney drove so much of the strategy with her move. It was her move to get out Nick, and everyone went along with it. However, at Tribal Council, she did not speak at all, or at least according to the editing. What do you think this means in terms of her winner's edit? Thanks. Love to hear your thoughts.
So, Kiva, you just said that you felt like that this was such a breakout episode for Sydney, and you saw a lot of her, and this was her big plan. But when we went to Tribal Council, she didn't have a question that was in the episode. Does that say anything to you about either her or her edit, or anything that based on that she didn't get any questions at the Tribal Council?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because even though I'm saying that I saw a lot of Sydney, we definitely saw more of her than in almost any other episode, but she still only had one or two confessionals. We did see her have a lot of conversations with people, but they were almost so crucial that they would be hard to leave out of the episode. But I don't think that we were hearing her story this episode. I know everyone knows who you think, you know, whose story we're hearing. But I'm not sure. I don't know who do you think the show was trying to give credit to for this episode?
I mean, I do think that it was Sydney that should have gotten the credit. I think that the show did portray it, but I'm not sure if that was necessarily clear to Jeff, or I don't know because if you believe what they'll tell you, what production says about Tribal Council and what Jeff says about Tribal Council, that Jeff doesn't know how the votes are going to go ahead of time. So if, you know, Nick is saying, like, obviously this is a 7-3 vote, everybody's saying it's a 7-3 vote, you know, Jeff is asking his questions, but Jeff maybe isn't privy to the behind the scenes information of that the women are working together, and isn't asking questions, and they're not giving answers that are revealing that at Tribal Council.
I'm not sure I buy that, but even, I mean, if Jeff says it, I guess whatever, but I don't totally buy that. But
he's also not blowing up people's spots like that if they're not volunteering that information.
No, unless he's telling Alicia that she's going home. But that was a different right. scenario. I think, if Sydney's a little bit more soft-spoken and a little bit quieter when she wants to be, and so it's possible, you know, a lot of times the answer when, you know, you're on here discussing, like, hey, you know, if it was really person X's moment to shine, why didn't we hear from them? I think the answer a lot of times is more technical, where the copy that they got from Michelle or from a Jason is just better. The confessionals are just more interesting than Sydney's. And why would you put a sort of a more clinical, boring one on when you can have, you know, the best quote? So I do think it's not always boiling down to who is the most responsible. And sometimes it's you know, who do they want? Who do they want us to hear from? Because they're funnier or more interesting.
And really, Sydney is turning into a really, really great character. I know she didn't say anything at Tribal Council, but she had a couple of really great lines during the episode. First, she said this about having to deal with Nick.
You better recognize who you're doing. I ain't these other little girls on this island. Don't check me, boo.
Yeah, don't check me, boo.
Now I'm going to start using that.
Don't check me, boo.
Yeah, don't check me, boo, which I really love. And then also, she was talking about this.
Nick came back, and he looked at Scott and Jason and was like, oh, she didn't say anything. And I'm like, brr.
Yeah, I'm like, brr.
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah.
She really is interesting. I do want to hear more from her. And feel like, I want to know more about Sydney. I feel like there's some interesting things. We haven't even scratched the surface of her, on her yet.
Yeah, she's really good in the confessional. So I want to see more of that, please. All right, and here's another question about whether we will be seeing more of Nick. This is Kalen.
Hey, Robin and Kiva. It's Caleb from Atlanta. Love your Seinfeld recap podcast. I've listened to every one of them, almost every one of them twice. I know that's crazy, but I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love Seinfeld. I love TV. But anyway, my question for you guys today is, how likely are we to see Nick on like a return visit or like a second chance or heroes versus villains type season? Because, I mean, yes, he was a douche, but in a lot of ways, makes a good villains tribe. I mean, Russell, Boston Rob, Coach, Tyson sometimes, they all can come across a bit douchey. So I was wondering if you think he would come back on his sheer douchiness alone, or if you think he's worthy of a second chance. Bye.
How about that, Akiva?
Well, he's listened twice, but the guy who's listened 11 times, we should be taking his calls. Forget about twice.
What do you think about Nick? Kalen says he's a douche, but, you know, he was our douche.
I'm not going to say it's impossible, but...
Wow, Nick is a douche.
To me, if they're casting a new, completely, a season full of returnees, and they're saying, oh, we really need the one or two, like, heel guys. We need two guys who are villains, right? Or even five men who are villains, or, you know, a whole tribe of villains. I just think that there's better villains out there. You know, are they picking Nick or are they going back to Dan Foley? I feel like they're going to Dan first.
Right. I don't think a heroes versus villains format is necessarily the right call for him.
I'm just trying to think of anything. Like, is it going to be like cool guys versus douches? Is that what you're casting?
How about all-star brains versus beauty versus brawn? Could he be on an all-star beauty tribe?
Do you have to have been on one of the two brawn? Then I would love his chances. If he just has to beat out Jeremiah.
The entire catalog, all-star, you need three men that you'd put on the all-star beauty tribe.
The three best look, and it doesn't are we have under to the be same parameters looking. As the last one? Have you? Is it you've only played once, or is it open to winners?
I think it's open to whoever they want.
Whoever they want, okay. There's unless it's guys named Nick, there's no way I'm casting him.
Why? So you feel like that he is somebody who you just feel like that there wasn't enough there for a second time out?
Sometimes as sort of super fans who listen to podcasts or podcasts about Survivor a lot, we get, you know, a guy like Nick, like he was already in our minds because he is an RHAP blogger. And so people had like a soft spot in their heart for him. But if you're talking to people hate when I bring up like casuals, but when I'm talking to like someone like my sister who just watches the episodes and doesn't think about the podcast and doesn't think about the show again till, you know, Wednesday at 8 Eastern the next week.
Does she tweet about the show?
She doesn't have Twitter, no.
Oh, this is a different sister.
I have a lot of sisters, yeah.
Not the sister you feud with on social media.
Not the sister that I'm in a big fight with. I think I'm blocked. Yeah, I haven't heard from her. I haven't heard from her in a couple of months. In real life, not just Twitter. But I think I think someone like that will not remember who Nick was in September. Granted, when they cast the last season, she had no recollection of Kelly Wentworth. And that went well. So it's possible production absolutely loved him. I'm sure he's coming into the game. He seemed like he had a really great appreciation for the game and the production. And even I was watching his Ponderosa video today. The whole experience he was really thankful for. And just, you know, being at reward challenges and little interactions with Jeff. I think he appreciated more than anybody else on the season. But unless sometimes the producers love them and have like this pet favorite. But even if that's the case, I just don't see how they'd spin it. He didn't have a thing. You can get knocked out at the final 10 and easily come back. Look at Jeremy. But I just like what's the sell on Nick? I don't see it.
See, I feel like that we're in an era. I mean, look at the list of people that they were going to consider bringing back for the second chances. Like, I feel
he wouldn't
like,
have been on that list.
Oh, no.
He could not have been on this.
I think he's more qualified than at least, I mean, if we're combining the men and the women, I think he's more qualified than probably, the bottom eight of that list.
I don't think so. I think Max Dawson has more of a shtick than Nick. I think, are you really going to bring him back over, anyone who was on that ballot? I don't think so. There's no way he would have even made the ballot. I would rather have a Jacqueline's fiance again.
Well, he wasn't on the ballot.
I know, because he didn't answer. It's John Mish. He didn't answer the phone. But I'd rather see John Mish again. I would rather see Reed or Josh again. And that's just the last few seasons. Like I like Nick. If he gets cast again, I bet he could do really. He would actually probably do really poorly, but good for him.
All right. Well, let's see how much you like him. Here's a question from Nick from Akron, Ohio.
Hey there, it's Nick from Akron, Ohio, and I'm just calling in regards to my fellow Knicks. So Knicks are currently 3-for-3 in terms of making the merge. However, I'd say that they're arguably 0-for-3 in terms of actually being a good Survivor player. If you had to do a power ranking of Survivor Knicks, what order would you rank them in? And why is Lamina star castaway Nick Stanberry number one? Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Okay. Akiva, are you a big Knicks fan?
No, I'm a San Antonio Spurs fan.
You root for Knicks?
I feel anti-Knicks
so far on this podcast.
I feel bad for Knicks, generally. I feel like I feel bad that, mismanagement usually costs Knicks.
Yeah. There hasn't been a well-coached Knicks on Survivor in a while. Okay, so we have three Knicks to choose from. You make a lot of lists. Let's do the power rankings here. The official Survivor Knicks listing. You have, back in Survivor Australia, the first Survivor Nick, Nick Brown. You remember Nick Brown? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure, of course.
Okay, and then we have the prototypical merge boot, the eminently forgettable Nick Stanberry.
Now, what's the award? What's the male version of the award on the Evolution Strategy for the least memorable female? What's the name? Do we have a name for that?
We call it the Golden Boy.
The Golden Boy. What's the female version again?
The Lisa Kiefer.
The Lisa Kiefer. Okay, so to me, the Golden Boy, I don't remember if he won it that season.
It was originally the John Kinney.
Okay. to me, Nick Stanberry is a historic Golden Boy. Like I feel like even like the super fans, if you haven't seen Panama in a while, you might forget a little bit of, more than his name about Nick Stanberry. Like, tell me one fact about Nick Stanberry.
He ate the beans with Austin.
Oh, man. In terms of who's coming back, I got Majorano ahead of him.
Yeah, so I'm going to say severe gastrointestinal distress for Nick Stanberry.
Wait,
so are you arguing that Nick Stansberry is number one because he's so forgettable that he's memorable?
No. There's not. I don't think that's even a thing. I think you're making that up.
Well, I called him the imminently forgettable Nick Stansberry.
Yeah. Oh no. Nick is third. If we're saying it in terms of who I like or who has a better chance of coming back.
No.
The list is the same.
Overall power rankings of the person.
Stanberry is a clear third. He did finish 10th, but it was on a 16 person season. And again, I'll remember Nick Majorano, I'll remember his middle name before I remember something about Nick Stanberry.
Okay, so that comes down to who you got, Nick Brown or Nick Majorano, who is the superior?
You have to give a little bit of a boost to anyone on the first two seasons. I feel like, Nick Brown is, even though he didn't do that well, he's still such a memorable character. I remember that he went to Harvard. I feel like...
Really?
Well, what's really? You're shocked that he's first, or you're shocked that I remember
like
he went
that? If I feel like that Nick Brown is one of the most forgettable people of all of, from the first two seasons. I think if you were going to come up with a list of the 32 people that were on the first two seasons of Survivor, I feel like that Nick was probably going to be one of the last people that you remember that it was there.
Sure, but more people saw more people saw an episode,
I guess so,
of that season than have seen all 10 of these combined.
Yeah.
Nick Brown, listen, Majerano, if he could have, the number one Nick spot was there for the taking,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like he needed to last about two more weeks. I'll go Brown one, Majerano two.
All right.
By the way, fun fact, there's never been an Akiva voted off Survivor.
Oh, you could be the first one.
Nah, I'm not interested. I feel like send the guy who wrote Batman and Robin, send him out there.
It was a real land grab, I feel like, for the Survivor Knicks. I feel like that is a name where it's sort of like there for the taking. I feel like there's a lot of names like that.
What, you think there should have been more Knicks? Is that what you're saying?
It seems like that it's weird. We've only had three Knicks in 32 seasons.
Yeah, Scott Pollard never played for the Knicks either.
Mm.
I don't believe Uncle Cliffy did either.
Well, congratulations to Nick Majerano on officially being Nick number two of Survivor and not being the Nick that sucks.
No, he's not the Nick that sucks.
Okay.
How often do you get asked to have Stanberry on the podcast?
I've never once had that request from anybody. No. Nobody has ever once said, hey, could you get the merge boot from Survivor Panama on the podcast? One time, I think Aris had said, like, oh, you should get Austin. Austin's a really fun guy. You should have him on the podcast.
But I feel like Austin Carty's name comes up on the show a lot for some reason, whereas Nick's never has ever come up once.
I think that's more of a memorable name to just throw out there for like a random thing, whereas Nick is not even a memorable nickname.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
This is, including the Stanberry family, this is the most Nick Stanberry has been discussed
ever,
in years.
Ever. Let's take a question about what's going to happen now with the idol moving forward. This is a question from Nate.
Hey, Robin and Kiva. It's Nate from Missouri. Don't you think Ty voting for Jason makes it highly unlikely the super idol will ever be played this season? And if that's the case, do you think the pre-merge intrigue with the idol, especially around the Anna vote, makes it the twist worth it? Or do you think it was kind of a bust? Thanks. Bye.
Okay. What do you think of this, Akiva? Is the prospect of a super idol forming now DOA that Ty voted for Jason?
Well, let me ask you one question about the super idol before I answer that, which is, if I'm Jason and I got voted out, and let's just pretend I was in, you know, a very strong alliance with Ty. Once I'm voted out, can I then, or let's say I don't know who has the super idol, can I then start negotiating with people as to find out who has this idol to then play it?
That's interesting. So,
like, how much time are they going to get? You know what I mean? Like, are they going to give me time to do that? I don't know exactly. We don't know really anything about the rules. Like, can I be like, does anyone have it? I promise you X and Y. And, you know, it's pretty complicated. And we have a scenario where a lot of people know who have them, but the caller didn't factor in the fact that we do think there's going to be a third idol introduced potentially.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting point about that, where like if you have a hidden immunity idol in your pocket, you know, it's sort of a, you know, dead ball at that point where it's like, oh, I got voted out and I got the idol in my pocket. Here, Kiva, you use it. I didn't get any use out of it. So hopefully it brings you more luck than it brought me. You can't do that. You can't pass it off once your torch is out. So I feel like that's a little bit like, okay, I've got half the idol. Does anybody have the other half of this? Because then, you know, I'll be your best friend forever. I'll never vote against you. I won't put you on the block for 6 weeks. Well, you know, whatever deal you want.
You could even say like, we'll flip a coin or, you know, the Survivor equivalent of a coin. If I win, I get your half. But if you win, I don't know why the person's making this deal, but just play along with me for a second. But if you win, I'm out anyway, but you could also keep my idol, and now you have two idols.
Mm.
I don't know why anyone's taking that deal, but it would be a fun moment to watch Jeff like flip a coin in slow motion.
Yeah, so I think that would be particularly compelling television. I don't see why you wouldn't allow it. And if Jason got voted out, like, please, anybody, does anybody have the other half of this idol? I think that'd be really interesting.
But to really go back and answer his question, I think that if they're introducing this new big twist, then I think they have to, and I'm not accusing them of any sort of production manipulation, but they do want to make it that the twist gets played, even if it doesn't work a la Steven last season. So I think you put a third idol in play and either, you know, it'll be an ally, whoever gets it will be an ally of one of the sides who have the idol, right? It can't be someone who has nothing to do with Ty or with Jason.
So you feel like that they would get the idol to somebody who is
I'm not accusing them of giving someone an idol. I'm just saying if you put a third idol in play, it's going to basically drastically increase the odds that the Super Idol can get played.
I was surprised that we didn't have a clue for the idol that Neil left with in this episode.
We usually only see idol stuff, especially this late in the season, if it comes to fruition. So if someone is going to find the idol 5 days from now, we might not see it until next episode or two episodes from now. But I do think there is another idol that's going to be out there, and I think that will really increase our chances of having this played. I just think that he's right. If it doesn't, I mean, and then I'm sure someone's going to ask
you just feel like it's hidden, but no, but it just like the rest of the season had not been, people weren't given clues to the idols. They just had to go and discover them.
Yeah. Or he will reintroduce it as some sort of reward, or as part of a challenge, or it'll be at a challenge. I don't, or I guess they did that last season, which in theory came before this season. So maybe they wouldn't do that yet, but it's somewhere along the lines. There will be, I think, one more idol. Or, Jason now is on, could be on the block and maybe plays it, and now they're reintroducing his idol. So I do think there's a lot of permutations for how the Super Idol could be played. I agree with what he's saying. If it never gets played, it's viewed like when we talk about Nicaragua, ultimately the fact that the Medallion of Power didn't work doesn't really make that inherently a bad season. Mm. But it's just another thing to mention as like, oh, that's just the producers, really struck out there. So I do think that's another reason, why it gives them incentive to do it. And I'm sure people ask, or have asked why Jeff is down in the season. So maybe the Super Idols, doesn't really pay off. And maybe that's one reason why he doesn't like the season.
Do you feel like that the fact that Ty voted for Jason, is that part of the reason why you feel like it will not happen? Because I feel like that one, Ty doesn't even know that Jason has an idol, I don't believe, from what we've seen in the episodes. So I don't think it's really, it's just going to come down to, is Jason going to be vindictive towards Ty to the point where I am not going to work with that guy anymore?
I mean, Jason needs going to need, to flip a couple people. So I don't know if he can afford to just write anyone off, especially Ty, who, who had certainly less of a grasp than anyone else. And clearly in Jason's mind and in reality was not the architect of this boot.
Yeah, but now if we have Ty voting the wrong way, we have Ty slipping up at tribal council, is Ty, and I want to say this in the nicest way possible, is Ty a liability? Is he a tie-ability?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you my fear when I was watching the episode. I did think after when they show the votes at the end, I realized, like, oh, he clearly messed up.
Oh, my God!
Even hearing the explanation, it doesn't really, the fact that he just had the wrong name and they never either never updated him on the plan, or he forgot about it, or maybe there's a strategic reason where, we just don't know yet, but maybe we'll see a confessional from him in the early going next week. To me, my biggest fear for Ty now is that he becomes like a Shambo type character who's almost not voting on either side of the alliance and is just there. Because even if you say he's a Ty ability, I don't think he is a threat where he's going to be the next person or second person to go. So he may even be there, even if he's sort of on the very far outskirts of one of these alliances.
But isn't he somebody who is now, he's won a challenge, he won immunity, he's also very likable. I think where Shambo was not likable, I don't think she was winning immunity challenges. Maybe she won one.
He's not someone who you want to have within 50 feet of the end. But when we're talking about 9 people left next week or 8 people left in 2 weeks, I think there's bigger fish to fry. I think Jason and Scott are definitely, names that are going to be coming up a lot more often than Ty, because it's, even if he's not with you, he's not necessarily with the other team either.
All right. Let's talk about something that went on last night in terms of maybe a turnaround in the edit for Jason and Scott. This is Jonathan in Orlando.
Hey, Robin Akiva. This is Jonathan from Orlando. So we saw the softer sides of Kyle and Scott this episode, where they told personal stories about their families and some of the hardships they're going through. After Kyle's story, we saw Sydney say that perhaps sitting next to Kyle at the finals would be tougher, as this might gain him sympathy votes. While after Scott's story, we saw Julia say she was endeared by Scott and maybe would want to work with him going forward. Do you guys read anything into this, as maybe Scott has more longevity in the game than Kyle does? And do you think divulging very personal details of your life can actually hurt your game long term? Love to know what you guys think. Bye.
Okay, so this is kind of fascinating. So Jason told his story about his daughter who is autistic, and we ended up seeing Sydney say, boy, that's not somebody I want to sit at the end of the game with. I want to give him money, Nick also had a secret scene where he talked about how, you know, I don't think I would want to be next to somebody like that. Or I was going to call that out, that he was telling us that information for a reason. Then we saw Scott talking about how he takes care of his family. And Julia's like, oh, I'm actually very close with Scott, coming out of that story. Did you see any difference between the reactions we got to those two respective stories?
Well, I think it's important. A lot of times we group Jason and Scott together, but I think for these purposes, especially we're talking about who to sit at the end with and sort of the extent of their sob story, I think it's important to separate them, because Jason, you know, Jason is a blue collar guy who has, you know, a very sort of specific issue that I think would be a type of, you know, Jeremy style tearjerker at Final Tribal. Right? He said he spends all of his money on his daughter, and he, you know, referred to himself as basically being poor, but because he needs to spend so much money on an autistic child. Whereas Scott, yes, he is a sick or aging parent, but I don't think that's the same level as you know, a guy who's supporting his child. Because I think everyone can come up with some older family member who maybe you know, needs help or something like that. Whereas this is a young guy with a child who has autism. And Jason is blue collar. Where, you know, Scott, if he squandered and a lot, and it seems to be like he may have squandered or you know, or whatever happened to a huge percentage of the tens of million dollars he made in the NBA, I feel bad for him, but I'm also not necessarily giving him a new million. Whereas somebody else who's never had the million, I feel like maybe I'd rather have let them have the shot with it. So I would be, at this point, I would be frightened to sit at the end maybe with Jason after hearing that story, but it wouldn't scare me away from Scott. I mean, can you see yourself? I mean, you've had this conversation before with the Jeff Kents or Jimmy Johnson, if you were ever make it anywhere near there. Like, can you really win it if you have the reputation of being a wealthy person? Have we ever seen a wealthy person win Survivor?
That's a question that we had been talking about before on the podcast. Who is the person with the highest net worth to have ever won the game? It's a very interesting question. And again, it's the type of thing where if the audience knew, or the jury knew, what would they do? And is there sort of like a threshold where it's like, you know, if your net worth is $900,000, you got a shot. But if your net worth is upwards of a million, the jury's not going to vote for you. I think it really comes down to the age old question of who are you sitting next to? Where if it's like, you know, where Natalie White was sitting there and, you know, it turned out, oh, Natalie White has a net worth of $8 million. Like, she probably is still going to get votes over Russell.
Well, it actually came up at Samoa. It came, you know, Jason mentions it.
But in terms of you know, what Russell had.
No, Jason says, I just want you guys to all know that none of the three of the finalists need the money. Mm-hmm. And you should, and vote according to your conscience, basically, because Natalie is fine, Russell's fine, and Dr. Mick is fine. So, you know, that was really, it's funny because if I was on the jury, it would be, to be fair, one, you know, if all things else being equal, it would be one of the first things I would think about. Whereas, and I do think the jury definitely discusses it. We had it last season where Spencer came out and said people were maybe telling stories at a school about his family and maybe being wealthier than even they are, just to sort of, you know, trying to prevent people from voting for Spencer. So I think it comes up a lot. And for whatever reason, the show totally brushes that aside. Who do you guys decide was the wealthiest winner in terms of net worth, at least based on what?
I think that probably, and this is something that we talked about in the evolution of strategy, but for whatever reason, not something that's always in the forefront of my brain. I think that Fiji is probably the best example of this, because I think that Earl is somebody, I think he like works in software or something, but I think that he was pretty well off before he even won the $1 million. And he was sitting next to Dreams and Cassandra. Dreams, a man who was literally homeless. Now, yes, he had just stolen a truck from a $60,000 truck from one of the people on the jury, but he's a man who does not even have a house, and he did not get a vote, as opposed to somebody who was pretty wealthy. And he might be the guy with the highest net worth to have won the $1 million the first time out.
That's a good point. And also Cochran, and listen, I don't know what Cochran has in the bank account, but you know, he has parents who seem like they're sort of, you know, upper middle class, upper class type people. I think his dad is a doctor, and they gave it to him, you know, a kid who had just come out of Harvard Law School, over a mom with about six children and another mom who happened to have been wealthy on her own. But, you know, so I, in terms of, I don't know how we got here, but in terms of how, you know,
the Scott sort of Pollard money question.
Yeah, no, I understand. But that would be that's a good thing for our researcher Sean Falconer to look into.
Yeah,
maybe make some calls. I want full rankings of you know, all 31 winners so far, or I guess 30 if we're not counting Sandra twice. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of their net worths. And you know, who has what left, what percentage left? I hope Falconer can get on that.
Well, I don't know if we need to get into who has what left, but I think that's an interesting question of who has
Mr.
what.
Westman. I know this might come off as a little bit you know, aggressive.
Right.
What exactly is your net worth down to like the nearest thousand?
Yeah. So let's take a question, which I think is something that I'm interested to know the answer to. Let's go out to Brendan from Brooklyn.
Hi, Rob. It's Brendan from Brooklyn calling. Last night we saw Aubrey really have an up and down kind of night. Started off with a really rough edit with her saying that she greatly messed up the picking of the tribe. But we didn't see that schoolyard pick. How do you think that pick went down? And was it really a mess up? Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. This, I think, is a very fascinating question because yes, we found out last night that there was a schoolyard pick before the challenge where Julia was the captain of one team and then Aubrey was the captain of the other team, which normally they never show us what the schoolyard pick is. Just like, okay, this is the yellow team. This is the blue team. Okay, let's go. But Jeff really called a lot of attention to Aubrey, really regretting the picks that she made. Julia, what a good pick she made. So do you think that between the two of us, and you are a fantasy drafter extraordinaire, do you think that we could piece together the draft order of the teams?
I think I could tell you how it went.
Okay. Let me give you the rosters here.
Okay.
So we know. So Julia on the winning team ended up having Scott, Ty, Debbie, and Nick. That was on her team, where Aubrey ended up having Joe, Jason, Michelle, and Sydney.
Okay. So Julia gets first pick.
Yes. Well, let's assume. Yeah.
Yeah. In this hypothetical.
Is it a snake draft?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, for Aubrey's sake, I hope it's a snake draft, unless maybe Aubrey got first pick and then Julia got next two, but I don't think I don't think Probst is a sports fan who's pulling that off.
You don't think they're doing a snake draft?
I don't think they do a 1-2-1-1-1. I think they do a 1-1-1-1-1 style snake draft.
Okay.
To me, there's almost no way you could justify Aubrey's logic here, but if she maybe said, oh, Sydney's really strong, I pick Sydney. And then, you know, so it's Julia picks Scott. Then Aubrey either forgets to pick or picks Sydney.
So you think that there's a chance that I kind of feel like that Julia had to have had the number one pick and she taken Scott number one.
Yeah, it's Scott, probably Sydney, and then Nick. Or Scott, Aubrey, you know, accidentally falls into the water and doesn't pick. And then Julia gets Nick before Aubrey picks. Like, it really, even when you saw it, I mean, I guess she was maybe thinking like smaller people would be better for the challenge. But I mean, maybe that's why she was so mad. We don't really hear her strategy. And you always make this point where they don't show the draft. And I agree that maybe it's not the best use of their time, but they should put it on YouTube at least. Put it online.
So you're saying that Aubrey ended up having just the one pick and she picked Sydney and then she picked who?
Oh, well, then after that, it doesn't matter. She probably got Jason. You want the whole draft? I'm going to say, It's Scott one, then Sydney two, then Nick three, then Jason for sure four. And then she probably realized at this point, oh, it's over already. We shouldn't even do this challenge. Then I'm going to say probably Ty because he's smaller.
That went
Julia
to Julia.
Julia picks fifth.
Yeah.
And then Aubrey picks Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Julia goes Debbie and Aubrey goes Joe. I would be willing to put, $0 on that. But I think that's exactly how it went. I mean, but I think Aubrey's just logic was off. I think she didn't realize that having bigger, stronger people would be good for this challenge, which is crazy. But I'm there's no other way to really explain why the teams ended up this way, unless it was random. But I don't think it was random. I think they said they were drafted, right?
Yeah, they were drafted because they made such a big deal out of like Aubrey with these questionable picks, and she was beating herself up over her draft like somebody in your fantasy league that it's like, oh, what did I do? Oh, I thought I was going to get that guy.
She like drafted a kicker in the first round, essentially. And it was a baseball draft.
Yeah, I would love to hear maybe if we could, you know, back channel this and figure out exactly how the draft went.
Could you spend like 10 of your 15 minutes on Aubrey's inevitable exit interview asking her these questions?
I don't know. Depends how soon she gets voted out if she's going to even remember.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, Aubrey. Well, explain to your logic on picking Joe.
Go, let's go back to the draft. Okay, I know hindsight is 2020. What were you thinking in the third round?
I know last night there was a quadruple idol played, and someone not even in the game was voted out. But I just want to talk about this reward challenge. And this is one of my pet peeves. Also, it ended up being decent television, but at the final 10, I still want to start seeing individual challenges and decisions being made on who. You know, who you're bringing on your ice cream reward with you.
This was a great this was good TV for you. It was a blowout.
No, not good TV, but I like the actual challenge. Like, I was thinking, like, how I would do it. It wasn't as, you know, I like that they don't need to, you know, shove a puzzle in every single challenge. But, you know, to me, I want to start seeing decisions. There's no stakes in watching this challenge. And I know every time I say this or someone else says this, there's always people like, well, I watch with my family and the thing my kids really care about the challenges. So I do understand this is a show that's on at Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And the challenges are very kid friendly, but to me, they just add nothing. Who are you rooting for during this challenge? You could literally be a guy who does 6 Survivor podcasts a week like you are. And you could very reasonably most weeks change the channel during these reward challenges that are team and not lose anything. I mean, there's no stakes. Who cares which team wins?
It's a very, very good point. I think that, you know, the benefit of this is that you end up with sort of these random assortments of people celebrating the reward. And I think that the show is hoping that you get some more strategy out of like these certain 5 random people being off on a reward together, or these 5 people being back at the camp together and sort of being salty about not being on the reward. So I think that that's where they're hoping the real strategic benefit of this is coming from.
And if I was the show, you know, it would take some guts, but it would be funny. You have a challenge like this. Let's say it was really boring and there's just no talking point. Just don't show it. Just be like a 20-second thing of like, by the way, there was a challenge this morning, but you know, it was a blowout. There's no reason to show it. Or just do like a quick highlight clip.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's like totally breaking what the show would do, but I feel like it's season 32. Why not, you know, try something different? I don't want to see these team reward challenges post-merge anymore. And you know, we're getting another one at 8. And I'm going to be annoyed. I'm just telling you now.
I do like it. I think it does give some juice when then somebody doesn't get picked and they have to either bet on one of the other teams or they have to just sit out. I do like
that. That's a great 2 seconds, but it's an 8-minute, you know, it's like literally a quarter or a fifth of the television show.
Yeah, what are you going to do? All right. Let's take a question from Wando about Ponderosa.
Hello, Rob. This is Wando from Washington, D.C., and I'm calling because I just watched the Ponderosa video with Nick, and I'm just like, oh my God, what happened to when people just went to Ponderosa and started a rock band called the Dragons? And when they just got fat and drank beer all day and gained back all their weight. Now they're all like emotional and they're crying and they're like in a therapy session. It's like watching an episode of Oprah. When I thought I could count on Nick to like be a sociopathic person who just gets out of the game and they're like not all emotional and crying 2 seconds later. And even he's doing it too. What is going on? I just want my old Ponderosa back.
All right, Akiva, what do you think about the modern day Ponderosa? I've been enjoying these Ponderosa videos, but do you feel like has Ponderosa gotten too touchy-feely that almost every Ponderosa sort of like the format is the person comes off, okay, what do you weigh? And then it's a lot of reflection. It's a lot of like, you know, this is what I always do. This was so me because I had this opportunity. I had this chance. And it's a lot of just talking it out, talking it through.
Yeah, I do think a different person edits them than did until about one or two seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the production values are much stronger and there's better music. But it is a lot of like reflecting and guys standing on a beach with like a slightly overhead shot of him just walking with his shirt off or like a girl lying, you know, sitting down, reading a book on the beach. I hear what she's saying. I haven't lost a ton of sleep over this either, but I do think when there's only two people, there's only so much drama. Like, I actually thought it was interesting because I watched this and Nick gets there and Neil isn't even there yet, but they seemed to like have this uneasy alliance where neither one was super mad about the game and they were willing to get along. But it was also pretty clear that they're not that fond of each other. And Neil, I don't know if you heard, but Neil got an interesting dig in on Nick that he's really boring and he likes, vanilla ice cream and other sorts of like boring stuff.
Where is it on Twitter?
No, in the thing he called him
Yeah. called him, he did not have extravagant tastes, Nick.
Yes. Sorry, doesn't like your ice cream. But I think that when you get more people, then you'll get more drama. But also, I do think that the returning player seasons have a lot more drama because they take it so personally, because you had something to do with that, especially last season, where there, you know, you get real animosity, or a season like the Philippines, where there was some real hatred at Ponderosa, where Cagayan had a ton, where no one would talk to Cass. But I think there's not a lot of hard feelings. So you need one guy, you just need the one crazy person at Ponderosa to shake things up. And so we don't have that person yet. I don't know who the Ponderosa, troublemaker is going to be this season, but there is, maybe Debbie comes off too soon and she's mad.
But what do you want there to be drama at Ponderosa, or you
that's
want
what it
somebody
seems like she
to
wants. Oh, my life is fine with nothing.
No, I thought what Wanda wants is somebody to come to Ponderosa and be like, "Woo, let's do shots, party."
They might even do that, and they don't even show it because it's like first of all, there's not cameras on 24/7 at Ponderosa. So the guy might not even be there at like 12 o'clock when they're, starting to pour drinks. But, I don't know. If you want to see partying at Ponderosa, I guess.
Party at Ponderosa. Do you think that Ponderosa videos and the Ponderosa series has curtailed the amount of the extracurricular activity at Ponderosa?
No, because again, they're not always there. I feel like when the cameras are out, the guy might only come for does interviews during the day. And it seems like they're always he's there at dinner, getting close-ups of their food. And then he's with them. He does maybe a quick sit down with everyone on the beach, especially the person who was just booted. I don't think it depends on the quality of the Ponderosa. I think a season like this season, it looks like there's roommates, right? This is it's not like one of these sprawling ones that they've had in the past. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we spend way too much time already.
No, not enough. We should
do you have three more questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Akiva, we're going to start a new weekly podcast. It's called the Akiva Ponderosa Podcast. Every week, Akiva and I will spend 45 minutes on just Ponderosa video talk.
And Jordan Kalish can give you like a This Week in Ponderosa podcast history.
That's going to be on Sunday nights. We're going to do Ponderosa talk.
I'm very excited.
Ponderosa. Oh, okay. This is a question from Caitlin from Boston. Wants to know, did Ty make a mistake at the immunity challenge?
Hi, Robin Akiva. This is Caitlin calling from Boston. My questions for you are around decisions made at the immunity challenge and whether they were smart ideas. First, Ty seemed to know he was going to be safe, yet he still kept hanging on in pain. Did he just show others that he's willing to do whatever it takes to win? Next, when Michelle, Jason, Scott, and Joe removed themselves from the challenge for food, did this show others where they feel they are in the alliance? What are your thoughts on each of these decisions? Thanks.
All right. So was this a mistake on Ty's part to go all out during the immunity challenge?
First of all, we both know that even if it is a mistake, it's not in Ty's personality to just quit on the challenge. Mm-hmm. So he's going to go all out. I don't think it's a mistake because, again, this is essentially a merge episode where you don't totally know how you stand. So why not win it? And if you're Ty, are you really worried about being viewed as another Joe, this super challenge beast? I don't think there are going to be types of challenges where Ty is a non-factor in. I don't think he's this jack of all trades challenge guy. In the balance type challenges, he may be a monster going forward. But I don't think I'm a fan of throwing many challenges, but I feel like the one where you really don't know where you stand is a good one to win.
What about the food for Scott and Jason? Was that a mistake? Did they come off as overconfident?
I think they did. By the way, good for the show for the first time in like 20 seasons where they didn't have like five confessionals of people complaining about, the fact that like, I had to compete and these guys, let me down, where you see that a lot. But this
usually
time
it's Jeff driving that conversation.
That's true also. That's true. But the producers are asking them that question in every single confessional of all the people who stayed up.
Oh, can I also add one thing about talking about Ponderosa? I know I should save this for our weekly Ponderosa show. And by the way, I'm joking about that for anybody who's getting excited for that weekly podcast.
I don't think people are getting so excited. I think a couple of people unsubscribed from the podcast.
Okay, if you're still listening, we were just joking about that. But in terms of the videos on CBS.com, you know what I don't need? And I love the Ponderosa videos. What I don't need is a secret scene from every single player talking about the challenge.
Yeah, those are boring.
I end up watching a lot of videos that there's nothing going on there, just looking for some nugget. And it's a lot of, boy, the challenge today. That was a tough challenge.
Well, I'm going to save you like 20 minutes a week, Rob, okay?
Yeah.
Someone volunteer to be the person who, when they get loaded up and you're still asleep on the West Coast, watch those videos. Because, you know, people like to watch them right after the episode. I watch them. But and then send Rob, like, here are the four or five you should watch. Skip X and Y, right?
Yeah, now,
you'll save Rob 10 of his. Yeah, you'll be his screener. You're like the food taste, you know, the food tester for the king.
Yes, yes. I don't want to have any videos that are poison.
No, I agree, because I watch them. Well, sometimes I'll like skip around, but, you know, I'm coming on this podcast today. I was watching them, and by the fourth person explaining, oh, man, we really rocked it at this reward challenge. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good. I would try and
get one from everyone, and sometimes they probably just don't have something usable, and the default is have them talk about the challenge, but there's never been a second of insight in any of those videos.
Yeah, it's a lot of, boy, as soon as I saw this challenge today, I didn't think that I had a good shot at this, but I was out there and I was doing it. And at first it seemed like, you know, I'm hanging on there and Jeff says it's only been 5 minutes. I'm like, boy, this is really taking so boring. So boring.
And they're always 3 minutes also.
Yeah, 3 minutes. Yes. Please, anybody, you want to email me, you want to message me on Twitter. Sometimes I get overwhelmed on, it's hard for me to respond back to people.
Wait, so put something in the message that they'll like, that you'll know in your email, which you never check on time.
Yeah.
So that you what should they write in the email?
Just send it to me, rob at robiswebsite.com.
Yeah, but what should the headline of the email be? It should be like urgent, CBS.
Yes. Urgent food taster position inquiry.
But it's not an inquiry. You have the job if you want it. Just send it. And I want to know also how many people for next week send you these videos. I'm curious to find out if it's zero.
No, I just want to pick one person. I don't want to have a lot of people doing
it. But how about this? But is next week the trials for that? Like everyone can send. And then if you don't hear from Rob, like, unfortunately, you didn't get the job. It went to a different Rob.
Because now instead of going through 15 secret scenes, now I'm going to be going through 30 emails. So it's real. Any time.
You know how many more seasons Survivor is going to go? You know how many more secret scenes? Ultimately, it's a win-win. And then you forward them to some intern and they go through these emails and they pick the best one for you. So you're never even opening up these emails. I will even volunteer. I will go through these 30 emails for you and I'll pick the best email sender.
All right, then that's fair. That's fair. I will forward them all to Akiva because next week I'm going to be on the road. So I got to have this all worked out. All right. So then let's take another question. Let's go out to our buddy Syrup Guy. Syrup Guy has a question about Joe. Akiva, you know that Joe is a contestant that's on Survivor, right?
I've heard about it, but I feel like he's, I'm not sure he's still on the show.
Okay.
Joe has had, I think, less than 10 confessionals so far, and he's not even less than confessionals.
Here is Syrup Guy.
What's up, guys? This is Syrup Guy calling in. My question's quick this week. I'm just asking if Joe is such a good FBI agent that he's so undercover that none of us know he's still on the island. Thanks.
Is that it? Is Joe so deep undercover that he's just like blended in? And is this a good strategy?
Yeah, it is interesting because I thought before the season we'd see a ton of Joe, right? There's no way you thought he would be anywhere this irrelevant to the storyline.
He'll be a character, and, sure.
Like if somebody said, if one of my, you know, to bring back to the casuals, like if my sister, somebody said, when she asked me who's on the season, I said like, oh, there's a former NBA player and they have like the oldest or one of the oldest contestants ever, a guy who's 72. And I think the youngest or second youngest contestant is Julia the youngest.
She is.
Yeah. So the youngest contestant ever, an 18-year-old. So I feel like those were the headliners. If you were writing like a tweet or like a very brief news brief about the season, like those were people who were, you know, some of the more compelling people. But we've gotten literally Joe and Julia. We've seen none of them. Julia, I see it. It says 6 confessionals. Joe is at 9. That's, you know, that's less combined than we had. That's how many Alicia had total.
Who tracks that? Where are you getting those stats from?
Well, I just Googled Survivor Koran confessional count, and you don't have to go all the way to the main part of Survivor Sucks. You can just go straight onto the page. So I'm looking at that here.
For Joe, though, if he was able to get his way into the final two, would that, or final three, would that sway people in terms of like, you know, I'm 72, I'm the oldest contestant they've had since Rudy, I've got, you know, 19 grandkids. Is there something compelling there in terms of like, hey, I'm old and I did it?
I do think that there'll be some sort of respect for him. But also, like, he almost gives off the vibe, again, when we go back to, like, the finances stuff. He gives off the vibe of a guy who's at least doing okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know if he's, like, dying for the money.
Maybe a different choice of words, Akiva.
No, I'm sorry. Passing away for the money.
No.
I think
no
you know
fun
what I mean.
Facts here.
No. No one even knows what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I really, of all nine people left, I have no idea of what the perception of Joe is. We don't hear a lot of people talking about Joe, and we certainly don't hear Joe talking. So it's a good question that I don't think we have the answer to. What do you think?
Honestly, yeah, I have no idea what's going on with Joe. He was like sleeping in the episode, and they were talking about that he has hearing aids, but he's not wearing them. And are they joking around? Does he really have hearing aids that he's not wearing, and that's why he's sleeping? I mean, everybody's just like talking strategy around him. I was just waiting for him to be like, I heard everything you said.
I think I have an idea as to why he's been anonymous. And maybe Julia a little bit also, although Julia's might be storyline. One episode, she wasn't even on a tribe. Julia's makes a little bit more sense. I do think we could see a lot more of Julia before her story's done, whereas I don't think we're going to see a lot of Joe, even if he makes it to the final three.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is that Jeff and Lynn and everyone in casting sometimes seem to, and they all, you know, they have a really high percentage, especially recently. There have not been a lot of duds the last few new player seasons. But one mistake they do make is they get excited about the person's like CV, about their resume, where like, ooh, Julia Landau is a race car driver. That's amazing. But that just gets you to the Chiron, right? That's like, it's exciting to say that she's a female race car driver who went to Stanford, but that's literally the only interesting thing about her. And maybe the same thing with Joe. Like, it's really cool that he's this, you know, very well accomplished FBI agent who also did all these other things, but you know, maybe he's got nothing interesting to say about Survivor, you know, and maybe, I don't know if it's the same thing with Julia, but it's possible also that they're just, oh, she's a college student, the youngest person we ever had. That's interesting. But then they get there and, you know, there's not much more they can give us.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case with Julia. They're like, oh, she's a college student.
No, I mean, of course, with college student, like Joe is more unique. With college students, they literally have, you know, a million people in the country who, you know, like an attractive college student to pick from.
Oh, an attractive co-ed.
Yeah, but it's not a casting trope they've gone to, you know, before really at all. You know, you have like maybe she's from the Nat Tannarelli school. She was a little bit older, but mm-hmm. It's something that maybe you'd think she's more of she's a little bit younger, but she's more of like a Big Brother style.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad you brought up Julia because I have a question about Julia from our good buddy, Sean Falconer.
Hey, Robin Akiva. It's Sean Falconer. I have a question about Julia. There's only been three other teenagers to ever play Survivor: Spencer from Token Teens, Nat Tan, and Brandon Hands. I've been pleasantly surprised by what Julia's done so far in the game. Do you think it's safe to say that Julia's the best teenager to ever play?
So on the other end of the spectrum, we've got the oldest contestant, I guess outside of Rudy, and the youngest contestant. Can we say now with any certainty, is Julia the best teenager to ever play the game?
First of all, I do like the stairwell that Sean Falconer keeps calling us from.
Yes.
I think that, so we got Spencer Doom.
Yes.
Brandon Hance.
Yes.
Julia Sokolowski. And who's the fourth one?
Nat Tan.
Oh, Nat Tan. Okay. And by the way, Julia's 22. This season was filmed a long time ago. She was just 18 when it was filmed. Does he want us to rank them from 1 to 4?
Well, the problem is we don't know how this Julia story ends. Like, Julia could next week go out there and make the blunder of all blunders.
Sure. Or she could totally, you know, take over the game. And they were just hiding her in plain sight here. She's like the new Natalie White.
Yeah, it's hard to plot her trajectory because you have Natalie Tenorelli, who is somewhat of a flawed player, but somebody with a super high upside in that I think a lot of times Natalie Tenorelli is going to go to the end in almost any season that she's on because she's super nice and super likable, but she will rarely, rarely win the game.
Yeah, if we're talking about winner's equity, I mean, Brandon Hance is fourth no matter what. Unless we're doing face tattoos, there's no ranking system where he's not going to be fourth. And I think third, we have to put Julia.
Well,
but
just hold on. Let me just explore. So in South Pacific, everybody said that Brandon would have won if he got there.
To be fair, Jim Rice said that to you once. I don't think everyone
said that.
And Sophie
said it too. But the thing is that Brandon Hance went really far off the deep end after South Pacific. So if we're talking about Brandon Hance, South Pacific era, you know, he was a troubled young man, but he was like also had the thing where he was like a nice kid and also, you know, was very religious and stuff like that. And so I do think that that South Pacific Brandon Hance, I think there was something there. But then, you know, then he sort of like spiraled out of control to the point where he could not exist in the Survivor ecosystem in any capacity for 39 days.
I didn't know we had a Brandon Hance apologist here, although to be fair, I know you're just worried about your own safety when you defend him.
I mean, I'm sure that there is a sports comparison you can make of sort of like the guy.
Yeah, it's like a guy who tore his ACL five times, except his ACL was his brain. So how about this? We'll rank season 23 Brandon separately from season 26 Brandon. So season 26 Brandon is fifth. I'll put Julia fourth. I liked Spencer Doom, and I'm also a huge Togan Cheens fan. I'm going to say Brandon from season 23 third, Spencer Doom second, and I agree. Nat Tannarelli, she's going to get to the end a lot, and maybe if there's no Boston Rob there, especially if she comes back and plays again, where you know, she could say like, I've been through it all. I went up against Boston Rob. I was on some stupid show that's probably already canceled.
This is confusing now because it has to be the age 19 Spencer Doom, age 19 Natalie. Oh, I hear you.
Okay. Fair enough. Listen,
because Spencer Doom, I think
I don't remember Sean Falconer making all these rules that you're
well, best teenager to ever play. That's like saying, oh,
fair enough. Okay.
You know,
you're right.
Who's the best teenager to ever play? It's like, well, Jose Reyes came up, or he might have been, I don't know if he was 19 when he came up or whatever, but we're talking about them as a 19-year-old. Right.
Okay, so Julia's an NA, really, but Spencer last, Julia third. Spencer Doom, in you know, there were a lot of big-time players on Togan Cheens, but I feel like in a quieter season, he could have done well. But I still have Nat 10 first, and I'll put season 23 Brandon second, because I do think Nat 10 really is so likable that she has the Natalie White thing going. She had, like, who doesn't like her? I'm sure every single person in the world likes her. So, you know, there are definitely scenarios where she could win, even at 19. So I'm going to put her first.
Impossible to not like her.
Yes. Have you seen her show yet?
I have not.
I'm sure it's great.
Would you watch it? I know you're a big basketball fan. Are you interested in seeing behind the scenes of the Clippers organization?
No. First of all, I don't think the players are involved. I think that would cost too much money and the team wouldn't let that, especially.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting if she played again. She probably has some crazy stories because she was, I think she told you when she did those, when she did the sort of the pregame interview with you,
right,
to try and get cast, she mentioned this very briefly, but she was on, and now we're getting way off the deep end about Natalie Tannarelli, but she was on she was in the organization
during the whole
Donald Sterling thing. I mean,
yes.
She's probably got banana stories about what was going on those weeks.
So, I'm sure. Yeah.
You know.
So that'd be, you know, you want to keep her around post-merge just to hear Donald Sterling tales.
I don't know. I feel like you could get them out of her in the first week and then you could boot her if you really wanted to.
What if you were on the other tribe? You didn't get to hear
them. That's true. Like, no, don't leave. I can't believe
you don't think she doesn't have 19 days of Donald Sterling stories to tell.
I feel like she does. I feel like, first of all, and there's more interesting, you got the whole Blake Griffin thing going on. You don't follow basketball, so you don't even know what I'm talking about.
I know who he is.
He punched like his friend who was the equipment manager, who's like 2 feet shorter than him.
Yeah.
And broke his hand on it and didn't play for a few months. Like, there's probably some really good scoop, but I also feel like you could get most of that out of her in the first day.
Let's take a question about whether the super idol was cursed. Keith, you're going to like this one.
Rob, last week you had a caller all the way from Syria. This week it is I, Darth Vader, calling from the Death Star. My question is simple. Did the super idol turn out to be a curse for Kylo Jason and his apprentice, Dark Scott? Did it lure them into a false sense of security so that they didn't cover their bases and stay on top of things? In Survivor, is it disadvantageous to be too advantaged? I'm hoping that your answer is impressive. Most impressive.
Okay. Akiva, yeah. I know you're pumped up to hear from Darth Vader.
Yeah. Is that Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Okay. Just checking.
Star Wars. Very pumped up for the Rogue One trailer to drop today.
I watched it five times already. I actually did. I did see it for work, but that's actually true.
All right. So do you feel like, as Darth Vader suggested, that do you feel like that the access to the idol and potentially the super idol might have lulled Jason, Kylo Jason, into a false sense of security?
Yeah, I think in general that happens, and clearly he wasn't playing it. Who knows if he even brought it tonight? I think that I don't think he was too worried about it. I just don't know. Jason in general is a really confident guy, so I don't think it was the idol that really made him go out and be super confident about his position. He has no reason not to be confident, right? Wasn't this the first time in the game where he was blindsided by anything? So to me, he was sitting pretty until tonight. So I don't know if it was the idol.
He's made a thing the whole season about how he knows everything that's going on. He has one of his secret scene videos where he's talking about how it's the final seven and they've got this on lockdown. This is the tightest alliance there's been in years. He said this.
Nice and simple. We do our thug bizzle.
Yeah. Nice and simple. We'll do it like Dizzle.
I think he said thug bizzle, maybe.
Thug bizzle?
I'm not sure.
Nice and simple. We do our thug bizzle.
Well, do it Thug Dizzle.
Thug Dizzle, I think.
What is that slang?
I mean, I think it's just like the Snoop Dogg, WWE Hall of Famer Snoop Dogg version of just adding an izzle to the end of everything. But that really stopped like 12 years ago. But maybe Jason's
nice
unaware of that.
Nice and simple, we'll do our Thug Dizzle.
Nice and simple, we'll do it Thug Dizzle.
But Julia Sokolowski wasn't even alive the last time someone ended an izzle. I don't know.
Yeah, wow.
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah. What is that?
Burr.
So you know, Jason is very confident, and that I do feel like that. Even if anything goes sort of haywire, I've got the immunity idol and I'm going to be able to sniff this all out, and I'll know if anything shady is happening. And maybe it was like an overestimation that he did not see it coming.
Definitely.
Total blindside.
Yeah. And also I haven't really complained about this yet. But you mentioned it on Nodalls yesterday, and I would have been 100% certain that this was a by the numbers, you know, voting out the brain scenario, if not for the dumb commercials that were airing during the NCAA tournament about, you know, oh, there's going to be a big blindside this week. Why do they keep spoiling us? I don't even listen to your exit interview because I don't like being spoiled. I'll read Josh Wiggler's. I just won't listen to yours because I don't like being spoiled.
What's the difference?
What's the difference between what?
What's the difference between Josh's exit interview and my exit interview in terms of spoilers?
I'm just trolling you. I don't usually do either. But I think that I'll just give Josh a plug. I feel like the show has gone so far out of the way, and I know Jeff is on my side here because he's complained recently. He said complain to the CBS marketing team. Jeff and company are not producing the ads. That's a whole separate marketing department. Mm-hmm. At CBS, but it's crazy. This show has the exact same number of viewers every single week. You know, there's literally like a tenth of a ratings point difference every week. Who cares if you're telling us there's a blindside or not? Why not let the loyal 9 or 10 million fans who watch every week not be spoiled before the episode starts? It really bothers me.
Yeah, I think that the commercials aren't necessarily designed to attract the new audience, but I think it's sort of a reminder of, hey, don't forget to watch the show this week. And I kind of feel like, well, what are you going to put in the commercial? And maybe there's just nothing like, hey, this week on Survivor, it's like, oh boy, this is going to be another tough challenge this week.
Here's the thing. Sometimes there are no blindsides and there's nothing, you know, you have a Monica Padilla and the seashells incident or whatever, and it gets the same number to the dot that the episode with, you know, with the Black Rock got, you know? No, like at this point, it's the same 9.5 million people watching every single week. So stop spoiling it for us.
It's a fair point all around. I can't disagree. Okay. Let's take another question. One more question. This is from Victoria from Baltimore.
All right. Hey, guys. This is Victoria from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm wondering who's been yada yada-ing their way through this game. Thanks, guys. Love you guys.
All right. Kiva, do you have a take on the player that's been yada yada-ing through this game?
Yeah. First of all, T-Dub just had an aneurysm. Only three people got that, but they're hysterical right now. Who's been yada yada-ing their way through the game? Yeah. I mean, you could say it was Sydney till tonight, but after tonight, I mean, you have to say Joe. Joe's like barely there. You know, you're saying he's taking naps during the game. I feel like that's, you know, unless your version of yada yada-ing is different than mine, I'm not sure.
Well, what would be your version of yada yada-ing?
I mean, to me, it's almost like I'm not there. But if she's making a Seinfeld joke, like the Seinfeld version mm-hmm. of yada yada is like I'm skipping over something interesting.
Yeah,
you know, So it's almost the opposite of what Ty did, where he should have yada yada the idol stuff and he blurts it out. So that's a good question. I don't know who's yada yadaing.
The answer is it's probably Joe, where he's like telling somebody, "Yeah, I was on Survivor, yada yada yada. I got fourth place."
Yeah, I think that's true. He had an interesting, YouTube scene this week where he's talking in the dark about how he's basically happy to be there. Right? He's like, I'm shocked I'm here, and if I go out tonight, I did well for myself, and if I go further, great. But I pretty much achieved my goals. So I agree. I do think, which makes him a guy who I think will be around for a while. There's nobody's coming after Joe until they really start worrying about who you're sitting next to in a few weeks. But I agree. He is yada yadaing something.
Now, can you yada Survivor?
Oh, you could yada Survivor. I don't know. Can you yada Survivor and win, I think, is your question, right?
Right. Because you can yada Survivor, because I was on Survivor All Stars. I had some nice rice, and then yada yada yada.
You skipped the best part.
I know. I mentioned the rice. It was fine.
Oh boy. yeah, I
long
do.
Way.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Joe.
Joe. Okay. All right, Akiva. Do you like it when we do the weekly RHAP song contest?
Of course.
Really?
I'm pro all the songs. I know people are like, whatever, they complain. No, I like I could never make a song, so I'm going to know of anybody who could send you and produce any kind of song.
Okay, because there's been a real rivalry going on between two of our musicians out there in the audience. An epic battle between Doug Potter and Shut Up Tim, that they're basically like the bird and magic of Survivor RHAP song parodies.
Well, isn't it more of a Tupac Biggie thing? Aren't they like, yeah. Is one who's East Coast and who's West Coast here?
I don't know.
Knowing your viewers, it's probably like, the eastern part of Saskatchewan and the western part of Saskatchewan.
Which one is more likely to say?
Nice and simple. We do our thug dizzle.
Hopefully neither of them.
Hopefully neither.
They're both too talented for that.
Yeah. All right. So here is Doug. And he has a song about Ty. And again, the rules are, this is full gong show rules. You call it when you've heard enough, okay?
Okay.
I see a little funny and lovable man. He is Ty, and we love that Survivor. Storm is kind of frightening. She is strong tonight, you see. She won't let go, he will let go. She won't let go, he will let go. She won't let go, just let go. No, don't let go. He's just a warm soul from a tough upbringing. He's just a warm soul that we think is lovely, sparing the life of the chickens and the trees. Body hurt, body broke, will you just...
All right, so we get the idea there.
We get the point. Yeah, by the way, you said gong show, but I wouldn't like, isn't Showtime at the Apollo? That's really like a better reference here.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think they also boo you off if you're bad.
Yeah, the Sandman comes out.
I don't know if that's still on. They used to be on right after SNL. I think that's been off for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what's going on there. But
if somebody, the same person who's writing in with the CBS YouTube videos, let us know if that's still on the air.
Yeah. And then, of course, here is Shut Up Tim. He has a submission as well. And it has to do with Aubrey and how she described herself at the tribal council last night. Here is Shut Up Tim, song number two.
I've got a giant boil on my thighs, and the whole world got to see it. And I'm upset about the decisions I've made lately, but at least I got this going for me. I'm Cochrane's dream girl, running around so full of anxiety. I'm Cochrane's dream girl. I'll probably even get a sunburn on my feet.
Okay.
All right, we got the point.
Very Wayne's World theme song submissions here. Original Wayne's World soundtrack.
I do you listen to the Wayne's World soundtrack? I wouldn't remember what was on there.
I know that it just happens to be two random songs from two separate people that both happen to be in the movie Wayne's World.
Yeah. Do we vote for which song was better?
You vote. You decide.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they both did well, but I'm going to go with Shut Up Tim. I feel like he really sells the, you know, he put himself out there with extending that note for like
half
a minute.
Oh, he puts himself out there. There you go.
How excited was Cochran to be mentioned, on the show last night? He hadn't been mentioned in a while. I also think someone should be tracking. Maybe Sean Falconer could do this. I would love to see numbers of, survivors who aren't on the season, how often they get mentioned. Because we used to have a run where Russell was mentioned like 10 times a season.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in like a Russell shut drought for years.
Yeah.
So I want to know like who, every season, who like the most mentioned person who's not there is.
Yeah. Cochran did tweet to Aubrey after that moment that he tweeted, she is Aubrey Bracco. He tweeted, Brooke Cochran has a nice ring to it. And then asterisk suggestively wiggles the eyebrows. So,
oh boy, yeah. An emoji or he said that?
No emoji. That's what he said.
Oh, so okay. So Cochran's making a move on Aubrey. That would really be the first Survivor couple.
Making a move on the Aubrey. I did say in the cast podcast, I thought it was faulty logic that would be what Cochran's dream girl would be, somebody who was really just breaking down all the numbers.
No, well, I mean, yeah, I think what is Cochran's dream girl? I mean, it has to be someone who drives.
I'd rather not say, I don't want to get too far into it, but I just feel like that is faulty reasoning on Aubrey's part.
He really needs someone to drive him around because he still only has like 8 miles on his car. By the way, you should have like swiped in there on that conversation and be like, hey, do you want to come on the podcast and discuss Bracco or Cochran or whatever?
Cochran?
Yeah.
I also assume Cochran does not want to come on the podcast and talk about that.
Well, listen, I listen to one of my favorite podcasts. It's called Hollywood Handbook.
Right.
And they seem to have no problem getting Cochran.
They seem to have no problem getting him. That sounds about right.
But Cochran, if you're listening, those were, by the way, if people want it, once you're done listening to all 6 Survivor podcasts this week, Cochran's appearances on Hollywood Handbook are incredible.
Oh, he's on often.
No, he's been on there twice, but they're both amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that other podcast has no problem getting a hold of him.
No problem getting him. They just.
Very interesting. All right, Keith, before we get into the Survivor social media, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. I know you're going to appreciate this because I want to take a moment and talk about the new Aero Cart by Works. It is the 8-in-1 all-purpose carrier that will make carrying around heavy loads so easy to do, to lift and haul, because it's not just a wheelbarrow. It's like having a trailer mover and a dolly all in one. Now, Akiva, you know me pretty well. You know that you wouldn't think of me as somebody who's able to lug heavy objects around the yard, right?
Even light objects around the yard.
Even light objects around the yard. But now I am the proud owner of an 8-in-1 cart, which does a number of different things where I can transport objects wherever I want.
Wow. Like such as?
Refrigerators. Boom. I'm moving them around like it's nothing.
See, I once had to carry a refrigerator up like 8 Manhattan Avenues.
Yeah.
And I probably could have used this Aero Cart, the Works Aero Cart. I feel like that would have been very helpful.
Yeah. Topsoil, gravel. It's like nothing because I'm able to move stuff around. It has all the different attachments which you could add to it. I could run basically any Survivor challenge in the yard right now with 2 oversized wheels. Even awkward loads stay balanced, and I'm never straining my back. I'm not like Tai Trang coming down from the immunity challenge.
Oh, that sounds good. And they have a great rating. They have a 5-star rating on the Home Depot.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I'm a move it all, lift it all, haul it all, know it all. With the Works Aero Cart, which you could see in action at works.com. So if you want to check this out, also go to aerocart.com, enter promo code RHAP at checkout to get free shipping. That's aerocart.com, AEROCART.com, and receive free shipping at checkout. Take it from me. This is the best wheelbarrow cart that I've ever owned.
And Works is with an X. Did you think it was wheelbarrow until you were 20 also? Or isn't it just me?
Until about 2 weeks ago, I think.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's still kind of shocking. What's a barrow? Wheelbarrow.
I don't know. All right. You ready to get into the Survivor social media?
Yep.
Let's get into the Survivor social media. Hit it, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than quietly eating ice cream treats. Tweets.
Akiva, is it true that you would eat a big bowl of chocolate ice cream at the Seinfeld finale party?
Well, we've been talking about possibly flying to Australia for the finale because there's a George Costanza themed bar and restaurant there. And, you know, one of our big Australian fans is going to foot the bill for that. So if we go there, if they do that, I guess if we get lodging also, they put us up in like a nice 5-star hotel. I feel like for that, I would probably eat one bowl of chocolate ice cream. I, in case people don't know or don't, and nobody cares, but I don't eat chocolate anything. So for that occasion, maybe I would pound some chocolate ice cream, but I don't think that's happening.
Would you offer that sponsorship deal to Three Twins also?
Oh, so you bring it up. I'm plugging a lot of non-RHAP podcasts on this podcast, but my other favorite non-RHAP podcast is Doughboys, and they rate food. They like rate chain restaurants, and it's great. Everyone should check that out. But so I thought, wouldn't it be funny if I went on the voicemails and I shipped, like I sent from like Whole Foods to Rob's house, some Three Twins ice cream, and I had it, and we like rated it in Doughboy style. I thought it was a good idea. I was really willing to do it. There was two problems. Yes. One, it would have made no sense because Neil got voted out last week.
So hypothetically, that yes. We would just like both be eating like a pint of ice cream on the podcast. Like, all right, let's break out the ice cream. And it would just have been like the same flavor.
No, I would have done like three different flavors. Listen, I was going to go all out. This was like a legitimate idea that I was going to do. The problem, right. So that was problem one, that Neil had the audacity to get voted out the week before I came on. The bigger problem for me was when I went to the website to actually research this, and I was even going to surprise you. I was going to try and ask Nicole if I feel like the problem is I get this ice cream sent to your house, and then like there's like ice cream in the freezer, and it's probably like $5, and they're like, who bought $20 of ice cream and isn't touching it? And then you guys get into like this big fight over like, Kiva sent the ice cream, what's going on? So I could see it would have went off the rails anyway.
No. Yeah, first off, this plan would have gone off the rails when you asked Nicole to help out with like, what? I have to stop what I'm doing to get involved with this podcast.
Right. First of all, Nicole, I do a Seinfeld podcast with Rob. We don't know who I am.
I did ask Nicole recently if she knows who you are. She said yes.
Okay.
She said Seinfeld? And, yes.
Oh, great. It's just another one of her that's like, it's not even Seinfeld to her. It's like, oh, Wednesday nights. That's what ruined my Wednesday nights. Okay.
Wednesday afternoons, but yeah.
Wednesday afternoon. I think the second and bigger issue with Three Twins ice cream that I'm calling Neil out for here is that I keep kosher and his ice cream is the only ice cream in the world that's not kosher.
Most I don't know ice cream if there's is kosher.
Like,
I didn't even know
that. Yeah. Every like brand name ice cream is kosher. There's not a lot in there. You know, I don't know if he has like pork flavored ice cream or something, but yeah. So I even asked him on Twitter. And he said, I don't have it up in front of me, but he said something like, it's not in our plans.
Not
in the plans. Not only don't have it, but it's not becoming kosher. So I figured if I couldn't eat it, the bit was dead. But other than him not being there and not being kosher, I think it actually would have been a funny bit.
And I'm like,
not kosher. What? And I just don't know, though. How funny is the bit going to be? It's like, all right, here we go.
Doughboys is really funny. I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, listen, it would have been funny if we didn't like it, I feel like.
Yeah.
I guarantee the bit would have worked for sure. It would have been good.
Yeah. Well, I would have felt bad to come on and then talk about like,
I know that's the problem. Yeah. I would have trashed it and you're too nice. I mean, if it was good, I would have said it was great. But how bad could ice cream be to be fair? Like, how terrible could it have been?
Yeah, but you also don't like chocolate, so you might have to.
I wouldn't have gotten the chocolate. I would have got like, you know, the vanilla and the now we're doing like a giant advertisement for Three Twins ice cream that I can't even eat. So
all right. Well, anyway, that being said, also, thanks again to Ryan Elder for the weekly social media theme song. Follow Ryan Elder at Ryan Elder Music. All right. Well, why don't we jump right in at Neil Gottlieb that he tweeted about the ice cream issue. He said, really, Jeff, you pull me and then give ice cream and it's not at Three Twins? Rude.
I don't know how much like promotion they're doing for players. You know, they didn't let him wear a Three Twins shirt. I saw he was wearing one in the Ponderosa video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they don't let you promote your, like, let's say you were going on. If I were you, I'd say like, I'm not even considering it unless you at least let me wear a Rob Has a Podcast shirt. And they would say, goodbye. We don't care. We don't need you. You're not wearing it. But like, they don't allow a lot of promotion. So I don't think that was happening.
Also, then Neil said, I would have spit out that S-wordy Cambodian ice cream.
It was such an ice cream snob. Didn't he say he doesn't even eat ice cream? Like he doesn't like ice cream?
I don't know. I wrote that on Twitter. I said, yeah, I heard that ice cream was so bad. I heard it wasn't even one twin.
Oh, boy. did he give that a retweet?
He did not even dignify it with a response.
It didn't even get a like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah.
Did you get blocked for that tweet?
Probably. That was probably blocked. Okay. You know, I also forgot, you know, Jeff Probst had some crazy lines also last night. This was the one that made a big splash.
Aubrey takes a dump.
Yeah. Did you catch that? Aubrey takes a dump last night on the episode?
Well, yeah, I caught it when you and 1,000 other RHAP people immediately tweeted about it.
Right, right. Yeah. Does that make it less fun? Has it gotten less fun?
No, it's fun, but I just think it was like such a weird thing for every single person to jump on him about. Especially since you just replayed it now. It sounds like he almost said dunk. I don't know. You podcast
Aubrey
like... Doesn't that sound like dunk now?
Did he say dunk?
He might have even said dunk, which really ruins it. Also, like, we podcast a lot. I misspeak twice a sentence. Can I really rag on Probst for saying something wrong?
Here was something else, much more under the radar, that I thought was pretty suggestive.
It's going to hurt, and it's going to hurt fast.
Yeah. So that's Jeff setting the tone.
He's in on these jokes at this point, though. He's admitted it.
You will feel it quickly.
Yeah.
He's scripting him.
Is he scripting? He goes back and forth. He used to say like, oh, yeah, I do it on purpose. And then he was like, well, you know, it's really in the moment. And I'm sort of just like, you know, maybe I'm tapping into like a Freudian part of my brain.
Yeah, I do think, like, I don't think he's saying it on purpose, but I think he's like very conscious after he says it of like, he's cognizant of the fact that, you know, oh, like that was a good one.
Yeah, I think that he's probably like, he says things and then sort of like after that, yeah, I meant to do that. But I think
also some of these challenges take like an hour and a half and he's got to entertain himself. Like if you saw actually one really sort of like, you know, only like a maybe like a, someone who really is a production nerd would notice is that Probst walked away from the challenge for a second. And it actually happened twice. Right. First, Julia falls off like when Probst is gone getting the food, which might have only been a minute. And then Probst walks away, thinking that like the Ty and Sydney are up there for a while and they kind of fall off and he's not ready for it. And his mic might not even been on if you really notice. Like he was very like low and out of like, and you know, his audio was out of sync. It was interesting. He was not ready. He was kind of like a little bit annoyed that Sydney fell when he wasn't ready for it.
I have to go back and check that.
Don't check me, boo.
Oh, we'll check you, boo.
Don't check me, boo.
Let's see, some other tweets from last night. Dr. Peter. He has been really all over the map this season and pretty actually not even all over the map. He's been pretty negative on Twitter that he tweeted after last night's episode. No more Zoolander.
What does that even mean?
That Nick is the male model for him.
That he's Zoolander. I don't know. Is that like a joke that was out there? I'm not buying it.
Might have been an inside joke that was out there. But yeah, so no more Zoolander.
No, Nick is smart. He's not Zoolander.
Yeah. Well, that's according to Dr. Peter.
Let's leave the comedy to the professionals. Mr. Bagginstos, Dr. Bagginstos,
Dr. B. Then we had Eliza, you know, she's always fired up on Twitter. She tweeted, now they're trying to humanize Scott. What is this episode?
I'm really shocked that Eliza's not like a Scott super fan. I mean, Dan Foley got a humanizing, you know, a couple humanizing scenes after his like heel turn also.
Yeah.
They try and make just about everyone not totally detestable. That's really been consistent forever. So I'm not surprised that they turn them into human beings. I mean, at least one of them is going to be here for 2 more weeks and possibly one of them is going to be here for a really long time or both of them. So you can't have these like, you know, monsters on the screen. So I think that was actually a good scene to sort of, even if you hate Scott or Jason, to show both sides of it.
Did you see the pictures on social media where Dan Foley was hanging out with Kyle Jason this week?
Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, gross, this. And like, they want you to pay attention to them. Just ignore them if you don't like them.
Well, they're hanging out together. I just don't understand, like, who reached out to who there? Who's, like, who's saying, like, hey, Jason, it's Dan. You're the best, man. Come hang out with me. Come down.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think it's Dan invited, like, 20 people. They said no. And remember, these guys have been off the show for a long time. So they've been sort of in the, you know, community for over a year at this point. But I feel like Dan was, you know, making some calls, seeing who wanted to hang out that weekend.
Just close your mouth, open your ears, and just watch what happens.
He wanted to continue the Dirty 30s, you know, lifelong streak of never having worked a day. These guys are always available. If you want to hang out
with somebody. Blue collar. What are you talking about, Akiva?
If you want to hang out with somebody in the Dirty 30, just call. I don't care if it's Wednesday at noon, you know, on a work day. They will be available. Combined, I think they have, you know, one job between the 18 of them.
Yeah, it just seems like a weird move like that that Kyle Jason is like, okay, sure, I'll go hang out with Dan Foley.
I mean, maybe, you know, maybe there were no bounties to hunt that day in Northeast Michigan.
Yeah. So you think work took him into Dan Foley territory?
No, I don't know if you're a bounty hunter if you could go to other states. Don't you need like a license for that state?
Yeah.
I'm making this up.
Purely social call.
Oh, it was totally social. He's like, do you want to hang out? It's like, I got nothing going on today. And one of them hopped a flight. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I don't think I have a friend in the world that would say, oh, well, I'll get on a flight to go hang out with you.
I would just want someone to like cut the piece where you say, I don't think I have a friend in the world. Play that as a drop on the Seinfeld podcast. No, I agree. I think everyone has, or at least should have, one friend who's either completely unemployable. I have a friend like that. Mm-hmm. Or just like, you know, is maybe self-made or is retired kind of at a very young age or, you know, is their own boss. And they could basically, I still have a friend. I'm married. I have three children. I work full time. I still will have a friend who'll call me on like a random Tuesday. He'd be like, hey, do you want to go to the Bahamas next week? I'm like, let me just check with my wife and my three kids and, you know, make sure that my life insurance plan is in place before she murders me. It's like, so I feel like that guy he's like, that's the dirty 30 attitude.
Yeah.
So,
forget a friend in the world. Like, I don't think that there's a survivor that would be like, Rob, I'm coming into town. We're hanging out. We're doing crazy stuff all day long.
You're wrong. There are people who do that. Just for whatever reason, those are the people you don't want to hang out with. You only want to hang out with the people who don't want to. I'm sure there are people who would do that. One, they know that you're busy and that you're going to say no.
Yeah.
Two, it's like the people you'd want, you know, who you want to come to town to do that are never giving you that call.
All right. Then here's another tweet. This is from Eliza. She said, oh, big shocker. The arrogant Jason and Scott stepped down.
They stepped. Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. They weren't winning that challenge. Yeah. I think that was one reason they didn't play it up is those guys. That was not made for the big guys.
Yeah. Eliza hates people who throw challenges and people who don't compete and step down for food. She said, unless you think you have no shot of winning, you should not step down for food.
So if Eliza thinks you're a challenge throwing bully, that's basically the worst thing in the world you could
do. That's right. Also, Eliza had to say, wow, Ty with the verbal diarrhea. That was some abysmal gameplay right there.
Yeah, now you know, like in real life, don't tell any secrets to Ty. He's going to be like, oh, I thought everyone knew you were pregnant. Whoops.
Oh.
No.
It's Ty with the verbal gastrointestinal distress.
It was a surprise birthday party.
Randy Bailey. He said, is it just me or does Sydney remind you of Crystal Cox, but with talent, strength, athleticism, brains, and social skills? So a real drive-by hit on Crystal Cox.
Listen, I'd say Sydney doesn't have a gold medal, though, but I believe Crystal was legally obligated to give it back to the IOC. So,
yeah. And then I thought I saw on social media also that Randy Bailey is going to be roommates then with the aforementioned Dan Foley at the Reality Rally this weekend.
First of all, nice job not springing the extra $20 for your own room.
No, I think they have a shortage of rooms. I think it's
okay.
Yeah,
I don't know how deep the shortage would be before I room with Dan. I feel like can I, you know, where is the Reality Rally?
It's in Temecula, California.
Okay, can I stay in San Diego and I'll drive up every day?
You can. I think you can.
Okay. All right. I feel like that's a fun. I mean, they have very, you know, different dispositions. Either they'll become best friends, or we will never hear from Dan Foley again because Randy will have done something to him.
Yeah. I feel like maybe they'll be kindred spirits.
I don't know. Randy, listen, if he agreed, you're already halfway there, that Randy didn't hate him after watching him on the show. But that's interesting.
Yeah. I think if Randy did not agree, I think it'd be at the point, I'm not coming.
When you're making those rooms, I think one of the first people you're worried about is like, oh, I don't want to put Bailey with someone he doesn't like, because that's it.
How about this? Sushi Surfer, the great Sushi Surfer, Jonas Atsuji, he tweeted, you've heard of RHAP? What about #JHACS? Jonas has a cooking show. Still working on the name. Yeah, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean,
you're a
foodie.
Like, would you watch Jonas's cooking show?
Wait, no, I'm fat. I'm not a foodie. I like to eat anything. I just like having four plates of dinner. I don't know if foodie is like the most overused term now. Would I watch it? No, I don't like watching cooking shows.
You want to hear a clip?
Yes, sure.
Guys, it's White Rice Wednesday. I'm Jonas Atsuji. Welcome to White Rice Wednesday. Yes.
So there you go.
Why doesn't he? Yeah, I mean, that could be the name of the show, White Rice Wednesday.
If you're anything like me, that means it's time to watch Survivor and eat. Watch watching Survivor while eating white rice, that's like...
That's great.
And I'm like...
He makes it sound like watching Survivor makes him hungry. Like, watching people occasionally eat bugs and show their staph infections, nothing makes me hungrier for some rice.
All right. Then, of course, Akiva, I know you must be obviously ready for this.
Tweets baby tweets Rupert tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yeah. You like the Rupert tweets game, right?
I love the Rupert tweets game. I do think that you have to remind me next time to block Rupert before I come on, because something did like, I didn't see it, but I saw like Rupert's face. I'm like, oh no, I had to like shut the screen off. But for next, if I do this again, next time I'm blocking Rupert the week before I come on.
Okay.
So, we like integrity in our Rupert tweets game.
Did you see something? Did you see a tweet from Rupert?
No, I did. I just saw his face and I didn't make out the tweet. I really didn't read it.
Okay.
I'm unspoiled for Rupert tweets.
Here we go. All right. So we have Rupert really had a lot of tweets last night. He really, he tweeted, no less than 20 times during the episode.
I didn't even know you could preload 20 tweets. That's impressive.
Okay. So I'm going to give you three Rupert tweets today and one Billy Garcia tweet.
Oh boy.
Okay. All right. Let's start off with number one. Why tell people they are on the chopping block? Okay. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, after 3 weeks, you start to smell, and I haven't seen them wash off in the ocean much.
Okay. I love that. Yeah, they usually show every time someone takes a bath, so I'm shocked they haven't shown it.
Okay. Number three, I've seen a man bun. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Okay. And number four, I'm a big fan of the chicken this season. One of the best chickens of all time.
He's a super fan of this chicken. I think I'm going to say the man bun sounds Billy Garcia-ish.
No,
that was Rupert.
No, so the bath one maybe?
No pumpkin, no.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Rupert tweeted that too.
All right, so I mean it wasn't the, so it's not the man bun. He's definitely a fan of the chicken, so yes, it's the other one.
Yes.
It's the other one. Third tries the charm.
Billy Garcia tweeted, why tell people they're on the chopping block?
Right,
Rupert also had a number of other tweets that were memorable. He tweeted, no one ever talks about an all-boy alliance.
It's a great point.
Yeah. And also, maybe the best Rupert tweet of all time, he tweeted out about Ty, he's a huggy little fella.
I would like to see Rupert like hugging and like crushing Ty and not realizing.
Yeah, Ty is like,
oh my God!
Hard pass.
Akiva, do you have a hashtag?
That's a good question. do you have one in mind? I'm going to be like, I don't want to be like nixed like Nicole for, you know, so I don't want to, you know, you just say no to whatever I say. So what do you have written down?
What about Thug Dizzle?
All right, Thug Dizzle's not bad. I wonder if there are a lot of like Thug Dizzle's, you know, threads going on from like the first few days of Twitter.
Thug Dizzle. Has that been used as a hashtag? People have been using it. It seems like it's been used at least 20 times on Twitter. It doesn't mean that it disqualifies us from this conversation.
All right, fine. Thug Dizzle. That's not bad.
Okay. Hashtag Thug Dizzle is the hashtag. Of course, you could follow Akiva on Twitter. He's at Keeve26.
And
he's also
Rob.
Yes, I'm at Rob Cisternino.
No, I know. I was thinking like, one of the best parts about coming on the voicemail show is, unlike the Seinfeld show, I will, you know, you get the bump in followers. And fun fact, I was doing some research this week. And did you know that I have the fewest followers of any Rob as a podcast co-host?
Wow.
And I was thinking like, maybe I could get a solid bump from coming on the voicemails. Last time I came on, probably jumped up like 50 followers just then. And right now I'm at 561. So I'm not going to get to Cesternino territory of like 40,000, or Wiggler probably has like 5 or 6. But I think realistically, maybe like Antonio Mazzaro or Haley Strong, that's like 1,000. That's probably doable.
All right.
But worst comes to worst, at least bump me to News AF intern Lita territory of 650.
That's
all I'm asking.
K-E-E-V 26 at Keeve 26. Of course, you can hear Akiva every week on the Seinfeld poster recap. Akiva also was with Antonio Mazzaro and Alex Kidwell on the first ever wrestling. Actually, I did a wrestling podcast with Johnny Fairplay about when the Macho Man died. But the first ever wrestling show on reality TV Rehapops about WrestleMania. How was that?
I think it went really well. I feel like if you are the guy who's super into Seinfeld, sports, Survivor, and wrestling, then I really had the week of podcasting for you to listen to.
Yeah. Of course, you could also hear Akiva on his own weekly sports podcast. 32 fans. Is it just 32 fans now?
I think it's just 32 fans, yeah. Which is a terrible name, but we're doing something different than we started. Yeah, but we talk about sports. We rank the greatest living American. We have one listener, but it's Rob, so we're doing all right.
You easily, it is, they have 32 fans, okay? That is why it is appropriately titled. Is that right? Is that why you came up with the name?
I mean, you're the super fan of that show.
I'm one of them. Count me among the 32.
Okay.
Yeah,
you came on last week and talked about the Mets, actually.
Yeah, we talked about the Mets, talked about Mike and the Mad Dog.
Yeah, about a minute on the Mets and a hard 40 on Mike and the Mad Dog.
Yeah, and 50 me and Chester on fighting. Where Chester went to college.
Yeah, that's true. I think we cut that, but yeah.
All right. So check that out. Akiva, how do people find that? Other than following you on Twitter, how do people find the 32 Fans podcast?
I search 32 Fans on iTunes. I don't even know.
Okay. And then coming up this weekend on Post Show Recaps, you can hear Akiva and I talk about the recap of the Seinfeld 100th episode clip show, which does not sound that exciting, but I think it's probably one of the most interesting Seinfeld Post Show recaps that we've done.
Yeah, I think it's maybe one of the craziest memorable podcasts in the entire Rob is a Podcast canon. I feel like, I don't know if that's where you should dive in. If someone, how about this? The first person to go back, listen to the first 99 and then get to 100th, who listen to this, I don't know, we'll let you come on the Seinfeld podcast, then you can make fun of us. I'm not sure.
How would we track that?
Well, I listen, we'll know. We know, we have, our listenership is small enough. We have a good sort of idea of who listens. So okay. I feel like we'll be able to tell if you just started now. I'll give them a test, and they'll only be able to remember if they just binged it.
Okay. And Akiva is a former teacher, so he could do that.
Yeah, I'll know if you cheated or if you Googled it, got it from Wikipedia, and the kids would hand in reports from straight from Wikipedia.
All right. All right. Well, Akiva, great job. Looking forward to talking with you again on the Seinfeld Post Show Recap. All the best, buddy.
You too.
All the best, Thug Dizzle. Okay. Bye. All right, everybody. There you have it. That was Akiva Winokur here on the Survivor voicemail show. All right, so we've got Big Brother Canada recap coming up on Friday. That's going to be live at 6 p.m. Eastern, and then I'll get back into The Amazing Race with Jessica Lease at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. So looking forward to that. Don't forget, on Monday and Tuesday of next week, we'll get into The Wiggle Room. We'll get into Why Nick Lost with David Bloomberg. And then, of course, we have the live Know-It-Alls coming up in New York City. Caroline's on Broadway. Very excited to be back together with Stephen Fishback live for Know-It-Alls number 101. So no live show coming up next Wednesday. We'll have that up on the YouTube channel and on the podcast. So make sure you don't miss that on robhasawebsite.com. And then we will get into all of the recap and the voicemail. Going to probably do everything a day later just because that really throws off my schedule, especially on the East Coast, to do the live show, come back around and do the exit interview, and then also get back to Long Island. So it's sort of a lost day for me on Thursday. But I will have an interview with Richard Hatch. That will be your recap next week. And then voicemails with Eric Stein coming up next week on the podcast for episode number 9 of Survivor Call Wrong. Looking forward to hearing your comments on robiswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.
I've got a giant boil on my thighs, and the whole world got to see it. And I'm upset about the decisions I've made lately, but at least I got this going for me. I'm Cochrane's dream girl, running around so full of anxiety. I'm Cochrane's dream girl, I'll probably even get a sunburn on my feet.
nice and simple. We do our thug dizzle.